basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-point stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille fade away.
Giants for the win. James puts up the three. Oh, it's good!
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in! With 5 tenths of a second remaining!
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, and a quick public service announcement. We got a summer league game at 3 p.m. Pacific time, much earlier than normal, as the Lakers try to move to 4-0 in biggest summer league and clinch a spot in the semifinals. So looking forward to that. But first, we're going to take some of your questions. And to help us out for that, been a minute since you've been on the mic, but welcome to the show to wonderful producer Jeannie. How you doing, Jeannie?
I'm doing fine. I'm trying to work on my robot.
Yeah,
book.
Sound great. So you'll be reading off the questions and would love for you to chime in when you feel like you got an opinion on it. But let's go ahead and get started. What's our first question?
First question is from Sahil. Do you want to see the majority of Mamu's minutes alongside Kessler? I know they may use him as a small ball five at times, but I don't feel comfortable with that unless Mamu is surrounded by 2-3 athletes.
I share the discomfort about Mamu at the five without sort of defensive protection around him. I would point out that the splits last year on a very different Toronto team, of course, to speak to their point, was like 70% at the five and 30% at the four. So he does play more five than four. And I think that was true in San Antonio as well. So on the two big front, for one, I'm very excited to have a two big look. It's been a minute since we've had a legit one. And one of the things that I think we can do with that, I'm actually a believer in your ability to switch while having two bigs out on the floor. And this is a bit counterintuitive, but I actually think it allows you to switch a little bit more in that one of the things I don't like about switching with the big man on the floor is you don't have any backline rim protection, right? So that was a thing we saw with AD where when he was surrounded by all the Lilliputians and D'Lo and Austin and Torian Prince, be like, oh, we're switching? Let's drag AD 30 feet from the rim and then have a jailbreak toward the rim on that. Having that second big allows you to have that backline protection that sort of protects against that. And so I do think we'll still switch a bit with Kessler and if Mamu's on the floor as well. I don't think they'll go that heavy in that direction, though. And I do think that Mamu will play a decent number of minutes at the five, which, again, I share the concern about the lack of athleticism, but I do think that switching with him and I really like our defensive scheme in the regular season. And I think that come playoff time, you have to have a certain level of talent that you're not going to be able to fool and scheme the other team only to a certain degree, right? But I think that our peel-off switching and all of that, I think that he can function within that so long as we've got, like, you're probably going to need guys like Jake, if Vando's still around. Fingers crossed on Kuminga, right? Some athleticism around him. But this is part of my concern with the backup five spot. So I'm with you on this, Sahil, but I do think that we'll see Mamu at the five, and that'll have some benefits to it as well.
My only response to that is that I would love it if we had a Scotty Barnes-type player next to him.
Amen to that.
That would be tremendous.
The squint and, you know, imagine with Kuminga. Oh, we'll see. We shouldn't even count chickens before they're hatched there. But yes, yeah, so I'm concerned about this too.
All right. Our old friend Rashina asks, do you think Adu needs to be a relative league average shooter to crack the rotation? Or could he get minutes in a role that we could envision Derek Jones Jr. or Kuminga to play in as a dunker spot, driving kick and defensive playmaker?
This is a great question. I think he's got to get to like low 30s to 33%. I don't think he needs to be league average, which is more in that 35, 36% range, because he provides so much more that, like, just the athleticism infusion. He's such a high-tier athlete that he can really change the dynamic of a five-man group. And those type of players that have that really upper-tier athleticism, you sag off of them, that just gives them a runway to do what they're most potent at. So I think the floor for the three-point percentage that Adu needs to hit to be able to play is lower than most other players because what he provides athletically. And yeah, you give guys like Luka and Austin lob threats at non-center positions. You could even play Adu at small ball center. I think that's one thing I've wanted ever since we drafted him, to sort of cultivate that type of look where you're switching everything and he's still able to heat up the ball from on defensively, but from that five position. And he could be one of those guys too, where if he works out, him and Mamu, right? That question that we just had a moment ago,
yes.
Right? All of a sudden you're on that track. Talk about squinting and seeing Scotty Barnes. You know, I think Adu's more in that class athletically. So, and I do want to see the Lakers invest in Adu and Carr and give them minutes and let them play through their mistakes. We've already seen just in summer league how much more under control Adu has gotten, that it would be a shame if he's sort of buried deep on the bench and not playing early on in the season. So yeah, I want to see that.
And, you know, I thought that Adu's finishing around the rim got much better from when I remember seeing him last.
Yeah.
So props to him for all the work he's been putting in and his passing and some of his reads. He was great.
Yeah, way more on balance, right? Like crashing to the ground on those drives to the rim a lot less.
Great. Speaking of Kuminga, Jordan the Lakers fan asks, what is the Lakers ceiling if they were able to pull off a Kuminga sign and trade that frees up space to sign Tybal and get Dallas's Musa Cisse by including them in a Kuminga trade using draft capital?
That's interesting. I don't know how we'd get Cisse in that type of deal. Although one thing to consider, Jovan brought this up on Lakers Collective, which is a good point, is that even not factoring in Kuminga, Atlanta already has 15 guaranteed contracts on their roster, which is the limit. And so, well, over the offseason, it's 20, but come regular season, it's up to 15. So I think there's a decent chance if a Kuminga sign and trade happens that there is a third team involved. So maybe there is a Dallas connection there and you could get a guy like Cisse. And I like that as an upside play for a bigger player. But yeah, even just focusing on getting Kuminga in here and then Tybal, that was exciting news to hear this morning. I do, again, want those younger players to play, and I think that Tybal sort of steps ahead of Mannion in the pecking order of things. But my biggest issue with him is just he misses 50-plus games pretty much every year the last few years. But when he's healthy, he's gotten a lot better as a three-point shooter and has always been a really good point-of-attack guy that I think Tybal would add a lot to this team. But yeah, he just misses a ton of games. So yeah, I love the idea, would love to get both of those guys. And then the question about what the ceiling is, I mean, ceiling is based on what if everything works out or anything plausible works out. And that's one of the reasons you make a swing for Kuminga. And my biggest pro Kuminga argument of why it would work out with the Lakers in ways that maybe he hasn't in other places is, well, for one, Atlanta was much better with him on the floor than off. I think he had like a 12 to 14 point positive swing with them. And then with Golden State, they just play a different style of basketball. They don't have a ball dominant off the dribble type of style. It's more moving around screens and pass cut, react, read, motion, replace type of system that I think JJ wants to go more in that direction with the Lakers offense. And Kuminga having experience in that respect is important. But I think Kuminga is much more suited for a ball dominant guard type of offense like a Luka and Austin, and reacting and cutting, being that lob threat at a non-five position and all of that, getting out in transition. Ceiling wise, I think this puts them, I don't think it puts them in the OKC San Antonio category, but I think this team should be set a goal for 55 wins. Like if they could get those two guys and what our ceiling could be, I think that that's what they should be shooting for.
And then as far as the playoffs go, what do you think would be their ceiling there with that group?
Only OKC and San Antonio are acceptable to lose to in a playoff series. Mm-hmm. And like, give them a little bit of help. Don't get swept the way that you did. And obviously Luka didn't play, but don't lose to anybody but OKC or San Antonio, and give them a little bit of a scare to where you're like, hey, another year together, adding some talent with some of the flexibility that they'll have to do that over the course of the next couple transaction cycles. That's to me what I see that ceiling as, is win 55 games, don't lose to any team but those two, and give them a little bit of hell.
Love it. Love it.
Let's go to break here. Come back and keep it going.
Great. The next question is from Curtis Franklin. If the Lakers do not get Kuminga, what do you think the front court rotation should be? Is there any other minimum free agent out there that you would try to get to fill in the gap?
This is my biggest worry right now, is what happens if the Lakers don't end up with Kuminga. The players that I would like, LeBron James, Peyton Watson, probably not attainable. In LeBron's case, definitely not attainable, and Watson, very unlikely. I am curious if Denver does go into that second apron or not. Cameron Johnson is a little older, right? He's 29, 30 years old, but he's only got 1 year left on his deal, so it is sort of a stopgap solution. I think that if we started this season with the roster that we have right now, you're looking at Jake probably starting at that other forward spot, and I think that would be, like, I think I like Jake more than a lot of people do, but he shouldn't be starting on a team that has any intention of winning 55 games, right? And that would sort of have a domino effect on the rest of the roster. I think it would kind of pressure other guys to play a role up than what would be comfortable. So Cameron Johnson, Spencer Jones, again, he's not on the level of a starter I would like at that position, but I do think that he might shake free from Denver. I'm skeptical on the PJ Washington stuff and all of those type of rumors. So there isn't a vet min that's out there that's waiting to be like, oh, come be our starting power forward. I don't want to say it's Kuminga or bust, but I'd be very, that's my biggest concern right now, is that if they don't get him, what happens?
So you do believe those reports that the Lakers are not interested in PJ Washington?
It's not so much that. I think that's plausible that they could have that position, both in terms of his contract length, size, and age. But I think it's more a matter of, I'm skeptical that Dallas does that trade with the assets that we have to move him. I know they were shopping both Gafford and PJ for a first and didn't get anybody to bite at that. So do they just keep it going, wait until the deadline? I think they'd have to really win a trade with the Lakers for them to do it.
Interesting. PJ Washington would be great.
I'd be thrilled
with
that
out there in the universe. Okay, next question. A little bit of a switch up. Jay Aquino asks, favorite Laker of the LeBron era? Mine is Rui. Seeing him grow in that Grizzly series into a sharpshooter, 29 points off the bench, tying Michael Thompson for all time as a reserve, was a great moment for me as a fan. If I could just jump in and answer right now, mine is definitely Anthony Davis.
Yeah, that was going to be mine.
So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah, AD is one of the most...
I had a feeling that you would say that, so I just wanted to... So it doesn't look like I'm copying your answer.
Now, AD is one of the most aesthetically pleasing players that has ever played the game, like Prime AD, and even helping the Lakers dig out of the hole that they did from 22 on, that's one of the things that it's easy to sort of take that for granted. But I felt like his efforts and LeBron's efforts and to just sort of get us to the place where we're at now, which isn't the top of the mountain by any means, but it was looking really bleak around 22 in ways that it's not that anymore. To go with a less obvious, like, I know, I love me some Caruso, loved watching him come up from the G League and his contributions on both ends of the floor. But yeah, for me, far and away, Anthony Davis.
Other players for me, Marcus Smart, even though he was with us for so little, I loved his spirit and his leadership and his effort on the floor every time. We've had some good ones during that period of time.
Yeah.
All right, next question. This is from Peter Gibron. Mm-hmm. Does the team need a better backup center than Looney? I feel like he can't be trusted to be the primary backup every game. If so, who?
I don't think that player is out there right now. I think this is the natural hole in the team. I also think that Mamu is projected to be more of the five than people think. And I think Looney is more of a third string spot. Like, there are going to be some teams where we're going to go too big against more often than others. And I think that Looney will be in the rotation on those nights, at least a little bit more. But by and large, I would expect that spot to go to Mamu. And I agree with the premise of Peter's question of, like, yeah, I don't think Looney's good enough at that role at this point of his career. But again, I also think he is a bit of a harbinger of where they want to go. And if you tune into tonight's game in Summer League offensively, like, this team really took a change when they put Anton Watson at the five, and now Watson can actually shoot that shot. But Looney despite not being a spacer, really knows how to play five out basketball and move off ball movement and that Warriors style of hoops that I think we're going to go more and more toward. But ultimately, I don't know what he's got left athletically. I pointed out he had two hip surgeries even before he played his first game in the NBA, which is part of the reason why he's 30 going on 45. And if you can't move to a certain degree, you know, who knows? But there, the optimist view is 2 years ago in Golden State, he played pretty well for them and filled that role quite well and certainly provides a mountain at that five spot, similar to Kessler as the starter, that, you know, maybe he has a bounce back season. Lord knows he's not old on paper at the very least, but I agree with the premise of this question. I don't think that there's somebody that's out there. If we could two-way Graham Ike, who has played extremely well for the Warriors summer league roster and does not have a two-way yet, that'd be great. But I think this is the likeliest spot where a hole would be. I would love for Jackson to have been able to return, but wasn't to be.
There's a bit of a leadership vacuum since obviously with LeBron gone, and before he signed, Austin was the oldest on the team. And at least this way, Austin isn't the oldest person on his team.
Yeah, he should be good in the locker room, and it's a pro's pro for sure.
Here's a question from Sean Davis. What's your take on the Lakers still having not hired an assistant GM to help with player evaluations? Would have thought it a priority before the free agency period started. Also, any news on the broadcast front, on the TV side and radio side? Will there be a change in announcers? Does this change with new ownership as well?
I think it's possible. I don't think it'll be this year that they make that change, but that's certainly with Lon Rosen at the helm now of the business operations, everything's up in the air, you know. But I am surprised at the pace of the search for the assistant GM. Also, did you see the LinkedIn thing Lakers posting for like executive director of strategic something or other? I forget what the title
was. I did see that.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the list of responsibilities, and my response was, oh, that's it? That's all they want you to do?
Oh, was it short?
It seemed like
that.
A lot.
Yeah.
I think there was some programming involved. I'm not sure.
Interesting. Yeah. I am surprised by the pace of it, but I do think that they are sort of building out an entirely different structure of a front office in the first place, that I'm as curious as you guys are, but I don't have any info on that. But yeah, I've been a little bit surprised by how long that's taken.
Do you think that the two assistant GMs' names too were leaked, one at Minnesota, and I forget which
Jilly was the
other
guy.
Other one was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you think that has played a role in the pace of this?
Possibly, yeah. Maybe they didn't get the guys that they wanted. But this is also we're still in a honeymoon period with Mark Walter and all of that, and sort of having all of our assumptions that it's going to be great and everything about it. But those are positions where I want to see us outbid everybody else. I want to see us flex our financial muscle, our new financial muscle, in ways that you don't lose out on your top targets. And if they're hedging a little bit, offer them a little bit more money. And we're not talking about player contracts either, where it's give us $5 million more dollars. A little goes a little, relatively speaking, right? Goes a long way in these types of positions that I want to see them get their guys. And so in both of those instances, that was disappointing. So we'll see how it goes.
Okay. Next question is from Dakota Bates. Knowing the general price of contracts/trades that other free agents have signed, what would have been your ideal free agency plan, assuming players would have wanted to sign in LA for the same value, in contrast to what the Lakers ended up doing?
Ooh, that's a good question. Let's go to break here. Let me chew on it a little bit and come back and give it an answer. All right, so I can think of two alternative scenarios, both of which I have arguments for, but not strong, like, damn it, you should have done this and you chose wrong. It's just alternatives, right? One, and this is the one I feel stronger about, but I also understand, I would love to add LeBron to basically this team that we have. We have a big old hole at the power forward spot, you know, that Jonathan Kuminga, PJ Washington, give me LeBron James at that spot. And I think that would have required a certain amount of hat in hand, Bron, we love you, appreciate you. This is what we're looking to do. We got to replace you on paper this summer, but we don't want to replace you at all. We really, really, really want you back. And maybe LeBron still says, I don't want to do this under a reduced contract to the degree that it would need to for. So like, say basically he got Mamu's contract instead of Mamu and is making $13 million, $15 million, something like that this year. And everybody else, every other move that you made, that's a team where I'm both short-term and long-term. I'm pretty stoked about what they can be because I think you can replace LeBron's contract with the non-taxpayer MLE that ideally next year, the year after that, whenever he retires. And then you still have LeBron freaking James in the playoffs, right? So that's the biggest thing that I'm like, I wish they did differently is approached that. I think there's a lot of history and water under the bridge in the relationship and that they, again, it had circled this year to move on and start the Luka era, which our friend Iztok has argued, you know, you probably can't do that with LeBron still on the team. In terms of the other alternative, it's a signing older players instead that I think are better now and more ready to win this year between Marcus. Maybe give John Collins that contract that he signed with in, what was it, Detroit, which was 3 and 51. So that's 17 a year. And then like Marcus Kelly Oubre type of thing. That I think is a better team this upcoming year. But I'm also like, I don't know where you're at on this, Jeannie. I'm kind of excited to watch a young Lakers team grow together where I think they can have that 50 to 55 win season this year. And that also be the worst team of the next three seasons and sort of grow from there. So how do you feel about the whole idea of a Lakers youth movement?
Well, granted, this is summer league instead of the actual NBA, but it's just so fun watching the team just run their asses up and down the floor and contest every shot. Floor burns all over the place and seeing that speed and youthful enthusiasm has been great. I'm ready to see it. I mean, I would have also preferred to see LeBron back. It's kind of funny that the biggest hole we have is that power forward and that's where LeBron is. And I'm emotionally not ready to see LeBron go, but you know, that's where we are right now. But yeah. It's time for another change. We made a big change after we traded for Luka, and now LeBron is gone, and it's time to turn the page.
Whole new era, yeah.
Oh, this is a funny one. This is from Admiral Akbar. Love the show. Two-part question. Is Austin actually a bad defender? I feel like he gets lumped in with Luka automatically, and it isn't always warranted. Number two. Can Bando have a resurgence with a Lakers shift back to a drop-heavy defensive scheme built around Kessler? Thanks.
Yes, Bando absolutely could in that circumstance where that is the biggest part of a drop coverage or most of the non-switching coverages is it's largely a two-man job. I mean, obviously it's a five-man job, but the main two characters in that, it's not just the big man in the drop, it's the guard that's pressuring from behind and staying attached and using length and strength and speed and physicality to do that. That's what Bando does for a living. And that's when he was at his best, where it was him funneling players right into Anthony Davis. And we just switched schematically in a way that played against his strengths. It is an interesting question, though, of how much is Vando factoring into our long-term plans, which I don't think is very much at all, combined with, well, if Vando's playing, that means Adu probably isn't. It means that Cam Carr is probably getting fewer minutes. There's even a guy like Mannion, who's a little deeper in the pecking order, but that's what Mannion does for a living, is he guards guys. And so would you want to go the route of Vando possibly having a resurgence in that respect, or do you want to let Adu take his lumps in the same type of role and see what you can get there? I see the argument for both of those, but I would probably lean toward the development and the let's build toward the next championship team. And if that's not this year, then get Adu as many reps as we can. And even if it ends up building his trade value and he's not there, I just think there's value in investing in the younger player, but Vando's going to be better at that early on, at least that aspect of it. With respect to the Austin and Luka part of the question, it's funny the framing of it because I don't think either of them are bad defenders. I think they have specific things that they are good at. And if you take them outside of that, then yes, they do become bad defenders at that. The biggest thing to stay on the switching scheme idea, when we watched that OKC series, Austin was one of our more frequent rim protectors because it's like, okay, we're going to switch and move the pieces around. And now it's Austin's guarding Hartenstein because we've switched. He's right under the basket. And now, one of our players getting beat off of the dribble on the perimeter, and Austin or Kennard have to rotate over to do that. And one of the definitive visuals of the Denver series in the playoffs that we played against them is like Austin trying to box out Aaron Gordon. And it's just like this ridiculous mismatch of size and strength and athleticism where it's about what position you put them in. But Austin's a solid perimeter defender. If he's your main on-ball guy, no, that's a bad thing for sure. But for a guy who has as much offensive responsibility at guard, he does well. He's very good at chasing guys off of the ball that are guards. And so if you put him in that role, he goes from being a certain liability in if he's under the basket trying to box out Hartenstein to a, hey, he's actually good at this job. I feel similarly about Luka, that if you can keep Luka around the basket, it's kind of the opposite, right? Where Luka is one of the best defensive rebounders in the league at his position. And he's also somebody who's very good at not letting a guy in the corner drive middle off of a closeout. He'll often cut players off and use that barrel chest to, you know, body them up and send him in to help. So very smart. It's also a good position where he can steal hunt. He's can really anticipate and get steals, cause havoc. Well, it was drawing a lot of charges this year. Let's hope Marcus being gone doesn't make him lose his enthusiasm for that.
But on the other hand, I don't want to see Luka drawing too many charges.
I do understand. I do understand there. Yes, it's a certain balance for sure. But with both guys, I think that if you can keep them as much as possible in their areas of strength, then they're, for how good they are offensively, I think you can absolutely compete all the way to a championship with that type of framework, provided that you have better players around them. And this part of what I'm excited about with Kessler is that if you're in that drop coverage or a non-switching type of coverage, it locks in other guys into consistent roles more often, where you don't allow the defense to be like, all right, Austin, go guard Hartenstein here.
It will be nice to see some drop coverage being run as opposed to switching all the time.
All right, we're going to do one more question here. What you got for me, Jenny?
Okay, here is a question that is more hypothetical than anything else. This is from Alvin. Who would be your perfect duo partner next to Luka if you could pick anyone in the league or not?
Oh, man. So I would want this to be somebody who can be dominant without having to have the ball in their hands. Ideally defensively, but I'm going to go a different route on this. I'd go Steph. Like Steph running around the perimeter with Luka as the main guy with the ball in their hands, I think that's just a level of devastating offense that just put defenders everywhere else. Not in the league, just sort of like all-time players. Kevin Garnett would be more of that forward, right? And I think in today's game, he'd play a lot of stretch five. We were talking about Scotty Barnes earlier.
Yes, that would be mine. That would be mine for sure.
Yeah, and I'd love me some Scotty Barnes. So, yeah, somebody who can have a great game without having to dominate the ball.
By the way, did you see Kevin Garnett talking trash with Tim Duncan? It was hilarious. I had no idea he was such a good storyteller.
Oh, KG's hilarious. They always get my favorite guys in the league. He was one of my favorite players of that era. And there were always rumors that, you know, oh, they're trying to team up Kobe and KG in LA. That was a dream. And then he ends up the worst freaking place. But I love me some KG, and he's a hilarious storyteller. The league is lucky to have him as one of the guys that continue telling the stories around the league. So all right, this is fun. Jeannie, thank you so much for hopping on, and good to hear you. And we will be back tomorrow, see if the Lakers can advance to those semifinals today. They got a game against Caleb Wilson and the Bulls. This has been touted as like a three-player draft at the top between DeBanza, Peterson, and Boozer. Every time I watch Caleb Wilson play, I'm like, this guy's freaking amazing. And then you hear him talk, he's got kind of a bit of that KG mentality to him that I just love me some Caleb Wilson. So looking forward to watching him today. Hopefully our Lakers can shut him down. That game's at 3:00 on Amazon Prime. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about that and more. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Ainge has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebounded Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Score.
Two.
Score. One.
Miss it.
Unbelievable. It's over.
And shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yeah. With a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.